Thank you very much. I'm Father Mitch Paquin. Welcome to EWTN Live, where we bring you guests from around the world. Our guest tonight has chronicled the very heart-wrenching stories of brave priests, religious, and lay people around the world who've been martyred for the faith in recent years, and thousands more who are right now courageously living under anti-Christian governments that face life and death scenarios on a daily basis. Here to share the plights of these fellow Christians with us is the president of the Faith and Reason Institute. He's also the editor-in-chief of the Catholic Thing website. He's the author of a brand new book called The Martyrs of the New Millennium, The Global Persecution of Christians in the 21st Century. Please welcome our guest, Dr. Robert Royal. Dr. Royal, welcome. Good to have you here. Thank you for writing this book. This has been something that I've been talking to the audiences over the last 24 years of being here full time. People think of martyrdom as being from the time of the Romans and the amphitheater and all that, but it's going on right now way worse than in those times, isn't it?
Yeah. This is actually my second book about the martyrs. Mm-hmm. I wrote a first book in 2000, and I gave it to John Paul II on May 7, 2000, back for the Jubilee year of 2000. And Aid to the Church in Need, which is Aid to the Church in Need USA, which is an organization that supports Christians who were being persecuted and martyred around the world, asked me to do a sequel to it. So we developed this for 2025. We hope to be able to give a copy of it to Pope Francis, as we did with Pope John Paul in 2000. But unfortunately, Pope Francis died before we were able to do it. Mm-hmm. But this is something that I've been following for at least a quarter of a century. And I can say definitively, the 20th century was a big century for martyrs, primarily because of totalitarianism like communism, Nazism, fascism. And it didn't end when the Soviet Union fell. It's going on right now in a slightly different form that we'll probably want to talk about. Yeah. But don't think that Christians only died back during the Roman Empire. It's going on around the world, every continent, right now.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. The martyrdoms are taking place not only right now, but it really is spread throughout the whole planet that Christians are dying for their faith, which is what our Lord said would happen.
Right. They persecuted me and they'll persecute you, he told the apostles. Look, the people who follow these things professionally, I mean, these are very credible organizations that look at what's going on in the world, say that at least 330 million Christians are under threat of persecution or martyrdom right now in the world. And I would say on virtually every continent, and we shouldn't exempt ourselves in North America or in Latin America or in Europe. There are anti-Christian forces just about everywhere that you turn, some of them less murderous, but still prejudicial against Christians. Yes. But once you begin to look into this, it's quite a fascinating subject.
Okay. So let's start off. Which continent do you think is right now experiencing the most persecution?
Well, I mean, the most, it depends on how you want to approach that. The most dangerous country in the world right now to be a Catholic priest is surprisingly Mexico. Very Catholic country, has been throughout its history. Most of the people there are Catholic. Mm-hmm. But because of a strange kind of confluence of criminality and just the way that the culture has been, it's the cartels, it's the drug traffickers, it's the human traffickers. And in recent years, and again, these are by very credible, objective standards, Catholic priests have been dying in greater numbers in Mexico than in any other country on earth. And it's because they oppose the criminals bravely, heroically, and wholly oppose them. Now, in sheer numbers, Nigeria is certainly the world champ in this regard. I think last year there were at least 5,000 Christians who were killed in Nigeria, mostly by Muslim radicals. And then all through Central Africa, where we heard, you know, about 10 years ago when ISIS was big in the Middle East, there was persecution of Christians in the Middle East and North Africa. Mm-hmm. once we kind of got over the hump in the Middle East, a lot of that radicalism moved to Central Africa. So it's Nigeria, mm-hmm. the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Sudan, and then it's even spread out into Asia and even into the Philippines, which is another very Catholic country.
Mm-hmm. This is a very sad situation where people, you know, because it's certainly clergy in Nigeria and some areas, not all of Nigeria by any means, but there are areas of Nigeria where priests are regularly gunned down.
Yeah.
Or burned alive.
Nigeria is a funny thing. Not very many of us in America know about a country like Nigeria, but it's the largest population in Africa. In a strange way, it has a lot of mineral wealth, so it could be a prosperous country, but because of the chaos there, it's not. And it's almost exactly 50-50 Christian and Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Christian South, you're right, you see very little persecution, very few martyrdoms. But when you get up into the north, where you have some of these Muslim-majority regions, and in particular, there are some states, they have states the way we have states in mm-hmm. the United States. Some of the states in Nigeria are able, under their constitution, to declare themselves officially Muslim, and so Sharia law is observed in those areas. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it, I think, is much more the kind of radical Islamists that we saw in the Middle East, who just want to drive out Christians. They think that they want to establish a caliphate. This is an old Quranic term, caliph and the caliphate in Central Africa. And that means they're not willing to tolerate Christians in any kind of numbers in those particular areas.
Yeah, the word khalifa, caliph, means representative, mm-hmm. and he's the representative of God. So to have, you know, the God's representative in charge of a country is a Muslim ideal, you know. But the caliphate was abolished officially by Kemal Ataturk back in the 1922, I think
22,
it was.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, a lot of people are trying to take that role. It's officially was abolished, but they're trying to bring it back. And so this one of the ways is by showing their radicalism in Islam.
Yeah, I describe in the book, a lot of us wonder, why is it that the Middle East is in such turmoil? And it's because the Ottoman Empire, which ruled that part of the world for centuries, when it fell after World War II and
World War One,
I'm sorry, World War One. Yeah. World War One ends in 1918, but the Ottoman Empire ends in 1922, and so you have all those areas. We think of them now as countries: Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Jordan, etc.
The Holy Land.
Yeah, the Holy Land.
Even Egypt and North Africa.
And those were part of the caliphate too. I mean, we think of them as countries, and one of the reasons why there's so much turmoil is they never really had an independent existence as nations. And so there have been various forces trying to stabilize them. The French, at a certain point, ran Lebanon and Syria. The British ran Palestine and Jordan. And so the Western powers tried to manage the transition after the Ottoman Empire. But then eventually, of course, they drew back because it just wasn't worth their trouble to be there. And so that's why we see this chaos now. You see different leaderships arise. And unfortunately, since the Muslim Brotherhood came into prominence in the 1950s, it can be a very radical Islam that takes over.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, throughout the Middle East, they've been fighting over Arab nationalism, that we'll just have all Arabs united as Arabs, versus the radical Islamic approach. And that conflict has also been part of this. So this is a very difficult situation.
Yeah, I quote in the book Salman Rushdie. Salman Rushdie is a British Indian, or maybe Pakistani, novelist who wrote a book called The Satanic Verses back in the 1980s. Yes. It was very controversial because it points to some verses in the Quran, the Satanic Verses, where it appears that Muhammad accepts polytheism for a short while so that he can kind of manipulate a certain political situation. And of course, Muslims don't like to draw attention to that part of the Quran. It's very controversial. Well, there was a fatwa issued. In other words, he was condemned to death by the Ayatollah Khomeini, which was the first mm-hmm. Ayatollah in Iran. Mm-hmm. It took 30 years. Eventually, he was stabbed in Chautauqua, New York. He lost an eye. And he said, and I think this is very striking, he said, the world thought after the fall of the Soviet Union, the fall of communism, and the end of the Cold War, that it had put behind itself the 20th century totalitarianisms. And then it woke up in the 21st century and found itself faced with Islamic totalitarianism. Mm-hmm. So it's that current within Islam that you're talking about that wants to have a kind of an empire. And they don't have the conception that we have in Christianity of the separation of mosque and church and state, or mosque and state. In the Quran, it's state and mosque are one thing.
Right. And again, I think in some of the governments that had become secular, like Saddam Hussein's government in Iraq, or Gamal Abdel Nasser in Egypt, and al-Assad in Syria, they were also extraordinarily oppressive and dictatorial, and folks looked to Islamic antidotes to that secular government, but then the totalitarianism was still experienced. Yeah. And this tension exists, and a lot of times Christians are in between.
Yeah, they're minorities in those areas. But listen, we shouldn't forget about the old style totalitarianism either. I mean, China is a vast country that is still persecuting Christians and other religions as well. I mean, we know of at least 10 Catholic bishops, I should say we don't know about that. We don't know where they are. They could be dead, they could be in prison, they could be being brainwashed. They've just disappeared and we have no knowledge about where they are from the Chinese. And as you know, there are actually two Catholic churches in China. You've got an official patriotic church, which is subservient to the regime. And then you have an underground church, which is still loyal to Rome. And as Pope Benedict said, we can't have a church. The ecclesiology of Catholicism is that you can only be a Catholic church, a true Catholic church, if you're in unity with Rome. So there's been this continuing pressure put on the underground church to join the Patriotic Church. The Vatican has been trying to negotiate this situation. But the totalitarian regimes haven't gone away. North Korea is the same way.
North Korea is even worse than China.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the lid is entirely down. If you look at any examination of which are the most oppressive anti-religious regimes in the world, North Korea is the top. And the reason is they're so repressive, you can't even find out what's going on there. Every now and then, an evangelical or someone will escape from North Korea, and they'll give us some idea of how the sheer tortures. I have them documented in my book. It's really worth reading into what they will do to people who are people of faith. You almost can't believe that there is that kind of hatred of religiosity in any place on the face of the earth right now. But it's horrifying, and it goes on, and no one pays much attention to it.
And which they know. And the other thing too is that it's not just the believing Christian who is tormented. They will also attack their extended family, sometimes to, you know, the extension to cousins, to the fourth and fifth, you know, level of relationship, and put them in concentration camps, even though they don't even know that their relative is a Christian.
They
are caused to suffer as a way to convince Christians, don't endanger your family, because we will do them great harm.
Yeah, and it's frustrating that we don't know more about this. I don't only mean about North Korea, but if you look at our secular journalism in the secular media, you don't see very much about Christian persecution. You hear about anti-Semitism, you hear about Islamophobia, but there's all sorts of anti-Christian stuff going on, even in the West. One of the organizations that we work with is called the Observatory for Anti-Christian Activity in Europe. It's called OIDAC. It's located in Vienna, Austria. Mm-hmm. And they use the European Union's own definition of what constitutes a hate crime. They have documented 1,000 anti-Christian hate crimes in Europe last year, 2025. In this, the month of January 2026 alone, there were 29 churches burned in Europe, according to their records. And they keep very careful tabs about what's happening in each country. Some of that is clearly related to the illegal Muslim immigration that's occurred into Europe. There's been, I mean, we have massive illegal immigration here in the United States, but it's largely Latin American, it's mostly Christian, and, mm-hmm. and whatever problems it causes, it doesn't cause that kind of cultural and religious clash mm-hmm. that exists in Europe. But if you begin to read about what happens on the continent in France, France loses two religious buildings per month, month after month after month. This is the eldest daughter, I sometimes say the eldest ex-daughter of the church, France. Italy has that problem. Germany has the problem. Spain, et cetera. England, the lovely British Isles, has large numbers of illegals that in which there's the same sort of thing. So we really need to be, as Christians, we need to be aware of this, and we need to be vigilant about it happening in our own countries, mm-hmm. because it's not something that's just over there. It's something that exists in our time, and probably exists in every time, just to varying degrees in different forms.
Well, we saw in 2020, in particular, a number of churches, some of them very significant historical churches, set on fire. I was thinking of the mission in San Gabriel, California, was set on fire, and lots of other desecrations of, you know, religious things. We, one of the parishes I used to serve had a statue of the Blessed Mother. You know, paint was tossed on it, and you know, it's this kind of thing. It's not like the persecution going on in Nigeria, and certainly not, you know, up in North Korea or China, but it still is problematic, you know, that these are folks who would do something if they could.
Yeah. Look, just in the past couple of weeks, radical feminists in Mexico tried to burn down a church. This is not only restricted to Mexico. There are places all over Latin America where this has happened. I mean, it was shocking that when we had an Argentinian pope in Argentina, radical feminists were trying to burn churches in Argentina. It happens up in Canada. Our bishops here in the United States did a study, I think last year they had a survey done. And over the previous 5 years, there had been almost 500 examples of vandalism, desecration of tabernacles, you know, deliberate burning of Bibles and missals and whatnot. So there's an anti-Christian animus in the world. I mean, our Lord says, pray for your enemies, which tells us that we are going to have enemies as Christians. And we shouldn't get complacent about this, that it only happens elsewhere. We should try to know about and help our fellow Christians elsewhere, but we should also be attentive to making sure it doesn't happen here as well.
Yeah. And you know, going back to something you'd begun with the cartels in Mexico, this is not just about going contrary to their business model. I remember some years ago, a nun and a priest were beheaded in Juarez, Mexico, because they were doing a drug rehabilitation program there, and the cartels cut their heads off. Mm-hmm. Now, that was because of the drugs. But there's another component, too. In the cartels, they are moving toward the worship of Santa Muerte.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this is sanctifying death. They worship death. And you see a lot of these skulls and skeletons and things like that in Mexican-style art, but they're actually worshiping Santa Muerte. And to worship death, that very important line in 1 Corinthians 15, that the last enemy to be defeated is death. It points out that death and worshiping death is the enemy of Christ, whose life and truth, mm-hmm. This is a very important component
now,
as well.
If you look up images of Santa Muerte online, and it's very easy to find them, it's almost like a demonic version of Our Lady. It's a female figure, but very clearly almost, there's no other way to put it, it's like a demon rather than Our Lady.
Yes.
And one of the ironies about this is, people, you know, anthropologists go back and they try to study this stuff. And at first they thought this was something that had been pre-Columbian and it had kind of survived under the radar among certain pagan currents still that were out there in Mexico. But it may very well be that it started in Los Angeles. That it seems like in the Los Angeles prisons that somehow among the prisoners there was this movement toward that, and then it kind of seeded back into Mexico. Now, that's at least one explanation for what's happened. Whatever it is, it's a confluence of exactly what you're talking about. There's something, there's devil worship in it. There's the exact reverse of what Christianity can be. Mm-hmm. There have even been cartel leaders who've been involved with it and have said openly that their goal is to destroy the Catholic Church.
Right. And this is something that is going on just to the south of us. And of course, I've known priests, one whose cause has been started, Father Rick Thomas, a Jesuit that was stationed in El Paso for many years. And he was always dealing with the Santeria and this other occult stuff that was very anti-Catholic. And coping with that was a big part of what ended up being his ministry.
Yeah, I mean, there are these hybrids that they kind of try to half play off Catholicism, have to present that what they're doing is holy, but it's really magic. It's kind of black magic that they're practicing. Mm-hmm. It's a very worrisome thing. Yeah.
It is. And, you know, this is something where our alertness, and I would add this too, we need to stay alert to anti-Semitism. The number of attacks on synagogues has increased quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's horrible. We saw just last week, in connection with the war, a synagogue was attacked with a lot of kids in it. But there are a lot of attacks on synagogues. And if we aren't vigilant to help Jewish neighbors with the anti-Semitism and desecrations, of course, you know, will be targets as well. That we should just expect that. All the religious people need to be alert to this anti-religious, anti-Semitic, anti-Catholic, and anti-Christian mentality. Yeah.
No, of course, we have a special relationship with the Jews because Christianity comes out of Judaism. Mm-hmm. Christ is the fulfillment of the promise to the, mm-hmm. to the Jews. And I think you're exactly right that I'm encouraged that the Trump administration has pointed out that it's going to try to defend Christians in the United States as well as Jews and Muslims insofar as there's prejudice against Muslims. In a lot of places, that's been entirely off the radar, as if, you know, Christians are just fine the way they are. But then we find that churches and Christian schools and whatnot are being attacked. In Europe, they just passed, there's a call in the European Union now. They've had committees to combat anti-Semitism and to combat so-called Islamophobia. Mm-hmm. And there's just recently been a call by this organization that I mentioned in Vienna that there should be some committee to track anti-Christian acts too, because they are occurring. And the way that they happen is that people just kind of dismiss it as, you know, it's just general vandalism or you know, somebody had had something against a local parish or a school that a person went to. It's interesting, by the way, that a number of the places that have been shot up in recent mass shootings have been carried out by trans people who kind of think that the church is some sort of obstacle to the way that they want to live their lives. These are all complex issues, but we want to sort these out and not just accept them as, yeah, well, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important element. This also is a call for us to be more willing to stand up and live our Catholic faith. I think at times there's a risk of us taking it for granted that it's, you know, we have freedom of religion in this country, which is great, and my Catholicism is in the background of who I am. But, you know, to be more upfront about our faith and know our faith. Mm-hmm. because if there is a need to defend it, you need to be able to explain why you're defending it, what it is you're standing for. This is a very important component of all this as well.
You know, in the general area of martyrdom, people talk about two types of martyrdom, as I know you know. One is white martyrdom, in which you're persecuted or you're receiving kind of unfair treatment, but you're not killed, actually. It's kind of being a confessor. And then there's red martyrdom, where you're actually killed, where blood is spilled. A lot of us have to recognize the fact that in the world that we live in right now, we may have to be, if not martyrs, at least confessors of a sort, because it's the way that Christianity has been pushed out of the public realm, as if we don't have any right to speak in public. This is simple nonsense. If it's okay for an atheist to speak in public, if it's okay for a Hindu to speak in public, which I want to say it is, if it's okay for a Muslim to speak in public, why is it that a Christian cannot be a public Christian? I mean, there's a justifiable nervousness that a lot of people have, and whether it's in your workplace or in the school that you're in. I worry very much about the pressure that's being put on Catholic hospitals and medical facilities right now, because people oppose the church's stand on abortion, on LGBT, et cetera. It's a creeping thing that can have terrible consequences, not only in the short run, but in the long run. And we can't let it get to the long run.
Right. Well, I can recall, I'm sure you can, back in the 1990s, under the Bill Clinton administration, they had come up with executive orders in the EEOC that people would not be allowed to have any religious symbolism in their workplace. If it was a private corporation, you still could not have any religious symbols on your desk or on the wall in your office or anything. They backed off from it. They got a lot of pushback. I remember substituting for Mother Angelica once, and I think I said something along the lines, let's all wear our crucifixes out and have them arrest us all. See how they like that? We eat a lot.
Yeah.
So,
fortunately, our Supreme Court has been good on this. The Supreme Court, generally speaking, if you follow only the lower courts, they're crazy. They do all sorts of different things. But the Supreme Court has been pretty solid about protecting the rights of religious people to operate in the country. And as long as that sticks, it takes a while sometimes. I mean, the poor little sisters of the poor have been under pressure since the Obama administration, which tried to get them to bring contraception and I think maybe even abortion into their health care for their employees. And now there's another case going through the courts that may end up in the Supreme Court again. But imagine going after the little sisters of the poor to require them to provide contraception or to provide abortion. I mean, that's really the state, and this is our state, our America, reaching into a private religious organization and telling them what they have to do, even against their own moral principles.
Yes.
It's not widespread, but I want to repeat, we shouldn't allow it to get widespread, and we have to stay vigilant and be active in opposing it when it appears.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think, too, given what your book brings out, this widespread persecution, we don't want to sit back and say, oh, isn't it wonderful we have people who are being martyred? That's going to be good for the church. Not if you're one of the people going through it.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a wonderful option. You know, most people want to raise their families and live their life in a normal way, and they will die for their faith, and they are dying for their faith. But we also need to include that, you know, if there is room for advocacy for freedom of religion in Nigeria and other places, we want that. If there's a way to, you know, discourage people from doing any kind of support for these cartels that are killing priests and nuns, you know, all over Mexico, we want to do that. And we want to pray for those folks who are suffering and their courage is being just pushed to the edge. We want to include them very much in the forefront of our prayer and of our thinking, and hopefully when we can do something to help.
Yeah, there are many, many heroic and holy people now facing up to things like that. And to,
yes.
And to look at their lives is really quite inspiring.
Yes.
I remember when I did my first book, a woman came up to me after one of my lectures and she said, weren't you depressed reading about all these things? And I said to her, you know what? It had never really crossed my mind. That I had never spent so much time with such obviously good and holy people, often forgiving their captors just as they're about to kill them. I mean, this is almost an unprecedented thing in human life, that people forgive you and pray for you and hope that you'll convert. So, look, it's worth reading these stories, and I've got a lot of them in the book of what's
yes.
going on with specific people right now, and particularly a place like Nigeria or the Democratic Republic of Congo. Whatever we can do. Nigeria was just placed back on the country of particular concern list by the Trump administration. It was taken off by the Biden administration for some reason. But countries of particular concern can have pressure put on them by the United States because of their human rights records. And thank God that we've got them back on there.
Yes. So. We have to take a little break. I want to encourage you to check out Robert Royal's work with the Faith and Reason Institute. Go to their website, frinstitute.org, frinstitute.org. And you can also see his podcasts at thecatholicthing.org. So just look up thecatholicthing.org, and he has podcasts and material that you can get, read while you're drinking your first cup of coffee.
1,000 nice short. Words, a short column, just one cup of coffee and some real Catholicism every morning.
Okay. We'll be back in a couple minutes with your questions and comments, so please stay with us. Welcome back. We are discussing a book called The Martyrs of the New Millennium, The Global Persecution of Christians in the 21st Century. It was written by our guest, Robert Royal. You can get this book at EWTNRC.com, where it is item number 5045. So get that there. And find a lot more about these individual stories that well told. Ready for some questions?
Absolutely.
Giddy up. Let's start off with Mike in Pittsburgh, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Mike, what can we do for you?
Yes. Good evening, Father Mitch and Dr. Royal. I just want to direct a question to either of you, but principally Dr. Royal, because I was listening to him a number of years ago on the Raymond Arroyo show with Father Murray, and he was talking about the church in China, and that if I heard him correctly, he said that we should really look to the underground church as the authentic church in China, not so much the state-sponsored one, which is rather compromised. And also, what does he think about Jimmy Lai? And that, do you think, I wonder sometimes if Jimmy Lai wants to actually be a martyr in China for the benefit of his country. And do you think he'd be open to being released by the Chinese Communist authorities if President Trump is successful in securing it during a hoped-for spring visit this year? And lastly, should we look to Cardinal Zen as really the true voice of the Chinese Catholic Church? I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Okay.
Yeah, let me take those in reverse order. Cardinal Zen, to me, is a hero of the 21st century church. She's almost 100 years old. Every now and then I our paths cross in Rome, and I can't get in a word edgewise with him because he just keeps going. He knows everything. He can lay it all out. He connects all the dots. So I would pay attention to Cardinal Zen about anything. I've never heard anything come out of his mouth that I didn't agree with 100%. Now, about Jimmy Lai, some of you probably don't know who Jimmy Lai is, but Jimmy Lai was a penniless, basically, waif who made his way to Hong Kong. He built this garment empire called Giordano. It was like a luxury garment company. And so he made a fortune, and he decided to promote democracy and liberty in Hong Kong, which was a British possession at the time, I think. And so he started a newspaper called Apple Daily. Hong Kong was handed back to the Chinese under a complicated relationship with Great Britain back in the 90s, if I remember this right. And they were supposed to have several decades of transition. But in fact, the Chinese began to move in very quickly on it. And they passed laws, in other words, after the fact, to kind of convict people like Jimmy Lai, who were standing up. And Jimmy is a convert. He became a very fervent Catholic, about 20 years ago. And it's his faith that has been keeping him alive. He's been in prison for 5 years, mostly in solitary confinement. His health is not very good. I just interviewed his daughter, Claire Lai, on Monday back in Washington. And our conversation will be coming out shortly in our FRI podcast. But I don't know. I don't think Jimmy Lai would like to be a martyr. He could have left. He has a British passport. He was a British citizen. He's a very wealthy man. He's a billionaire. He could have left Hong Kong when they were putting pressure on him, but he didn't. He decided he would stand up for his fellow Hong Kongers, and he was inspired by his Christian faith. So, I mean, personally, I think that at this point, he was just found guilty of, you know, anti-communist acts and sentenced to 20 years. He's in his 70s. His health is poor. If he stays in prison another 20 years, he'll die there. I myself think that at this point, the best thing that could happen would be for him to be expelled from the country and sent back to the UK. And he still would be a grave witness, confessor, you know, white martyr, etc. About the question of the underground church versus the patriotic church, we're in a very delicate situation in the Catholic Church right now because the Vatican several years ago signed a secret accord. Secret here doesn't mean no one knows about it. It's just we don't know what the details of the accord are. But the church signed an accord with the Chinese Communist government, which we hoped would regularize the way bishops are appointed in the Patriotic Church, because the Chinese control that Patriotic Church. They've set up other church bodies like this. It's their way to make it look like they're allowing religion, but it's actually a controlled religion. My feeling about this is the church, our church, has gotten little to nothing out of this because the Chinese do whatever they want in terms of bishops' appointments. They appointed a bishop in the interregnum between Pope Francis and Pope Leo, for example. And then Pope Leo had to recognize afterwards that it was a valid appointment, and so he confirmed it. But that's not really the way this is supposed to work. The way it's supposed to work, as I mentioned earlier, is what Pope Benedict told us. Our ecclesiology, the way our theology of the church works, is the only true church, the only true Catholic church, must be in communion with Peter. And so a church like the Patriotic Church that is being moved more and more away from connection with Rome, and they use the term outright, Sinicization, which means Chinesization of the church. And they put up inside the church images of Chairman Xi, and they take down crosses and, you know, images of Our Lady and whatnot. They even rewrite parts of the Bible for their own purposes. So this is a very shrewd thing that they're doing. And meanwhile, we have these heroic people who are in the underground church. We know there are at least 10 bishops missing right now from the underground church. So it's a very difficult circumstance. I don't know what Rome is going to be able to do about this. I think that we painted ourselves into a corner. I don't know what would happen if they abrogated the agreement. We just don't know enough about it. But it's clear that the situation that we're in did not resolve the conflict with the communist regime in China, and something else is going to have to be done.
Yeah.
We have a question from our studio audience. Ma'am, where are you from?
Texas.
And what is your question?
I'd like to know, who is funding, giving money to the groups that are persecuting and burning the churches in Mexico and Argentina?
Well, I think in Mexico, you know, the criminality in Mexico has a great deal of money. When you think of, you know, some of these cartels are like states within the state. So it's, it would not be surprising that insofar as they want to support, say, Santa Muerte or you know, do something within in the country, the Mexican government periodically tries to do something about the cartels. But the cartels are so strong, and truth be told, they've infiltrated the government itself. So I don't know if that the money is going to the feminists who are trying to build the church. I have a feeling that is more a part of the international feminist movement that's supported by various left-wing foundations and whatnot. And I think it's probably the same is true in Argentina, where you don't really have that same degree of criminality as you have on the border here with the United States. But it's a good question, because obviously these movements, we've seen it even here in the United States with some of these radical movements. There's underground money. It could be coming from China. It could be coming from Russia. It could be coming from Iran, for that matter, because it creates chaos in the West. And there are lots of people who benefit from chaos in the West.
We have another caller. Let's go to Michael in Spokane, Washington. Michael, what can we do for you?
Yeah, thank you, Father, for taking my call. And, Bob, I watch your program the world over. My question is on the Mexican cartel, drug cartels, which have finally been declared a terrorist organization by the Trump administration. These Mexican drug cartels, as you mentioned, kill priests, religious, civilians. What will the results be of these drug, and they run the country, basically. What will the results be of these drug cartels being declared a terrorist organization by the Trump administration?
Yeah, well, we have seen some movement in Mexico. They just killed El Mencho, who is the leader of one of the drug cartels in, was it Sinaloa? Or I don't remember right now. But as I said, there's a kind of a periodic attempt on the part of the Mexican government to control parts of it. Look, there's a lot of criminality in Mexico where police chiefs and mayors of small towns themselves are killed when they try to stand up to the cartels. So it's good that the Trump administration has declared them terrorists. They clearly have a very, very bad influence on us here in the United States. Most of us don't see it because we're not involved with it. But it is, you know, it's like a dragon. It's not just a snake. It's a big entity that does a lot of evil. I would like to see us find some way to cooperate with the Mexicans about this. I mean, we're quite a bit occupied right now in Iran and Venezuela and perhaps, in Cuba in short order. But this is something that doesn't go away. This isn't something where you take away a problem and it's done. I think that this is going to be a matter of decades rather than years.
Yeah. We have a question from our studio audience. Where are you from?
Originally from Puerto Rico, but I live in Texas.
Okay. And what is your question?
Since the Cristiada in Mexico happened in 1920s and they had to go underground and fight for their faith, do you think in these next few years, going on, looking at the things going on in the world right now, also involving Catholics and Christians, do you think we will have to go back to what Mexico had to do in the 1920s?
Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen. Probably a lot of you don't know this story, but Mexico is one of the first socialist regimes in the world. I think in 1913, is when they first became an officially socialist regime. And so after that, they began to put on very, very serious pressure on the Catholic Church. It was clear that the Catholic Church, they considered the Catholic Church their main opposition. And the Catholic Church is always opposed to these sort of radically socialist or communist regimes, so it's not a surprise. Eventually, it led to the Cristero Wars in the teens and the 20s. There's a lot of very good material about this. Graham Greene, the British Catholic novelist, wrote a novel called The Power and the Glory about that period, and also another nonfictional account of what it was like in Mexico in those days. But I don't think that there is, at least right now, the same kind of ideological fervor inside the Mexican regime. As leftist as it is, I don't see the return of that kind of hardcore socialist regime. I mean, they support Cuba now, and always have, and they're supporting Cuba a lot now that Venezuela has been taken out of the picture. But I think whatever opposition is going to come from the official government is going to be much reduced, and I pray to God we don't go back to those days where we have these ideological regimes like we had in the 20th century, because you want to talk about body counts. I think something on the order of 300,000 people were killed during the Cristero War in Mexico. Right on our border, very few of us know about it.
Yeah. But, and it's also worth noting that in other very Catholic countries, governments turned against the church and turned against Catholics. I think of revolutionary France in the 1790s. Hundreds of thousands of Catholics were killed because they wouldn't go along with state notions of religion and wanted to keep their Catholicism. In the Spanish Civil War back in the 1930s. And then, of course, Russia had been a very Christian country, you know, solidly Orthodox, with a lot of Catholics in there as well. And they turned against their people and for their religion. So this has gone on lots of times, of course, the Nazis in Germany. This is an ongoing problem that we have to stay, again, alert, that we don't let government get away with such stuff. We have another question from our studio audience. Sir, where are you from?
I am a seminarian from the Diocese of Austin in Texas.
Okay, great. Good to have you here.
Yeah, good to be with you. So my question is, Tertullian famously wrote that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church, and the witness of some of the 20th century martyrs, like St. Oscar Romero, St. Maximin Kolbe, played a large part in my vocation story. I don't know if you'd be able to comment on maybe the witness of martyrs as we come into the 21st century.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Yes, someone once joked that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church just as long as the seed isn't spread too thick on the ground. you know, when you get a lot of martyrdom, it forces people underground, and, you know, maybe the faith goes away and maybe it doesn't. You know, it's one of the most interesting things that I came across as I was writing the new book, that the country in Africa where Christianity is growing the fastest is Nigeria. So that country where so much pressure is being put by radical Islam on its Christians, at the same time is producing large crops of Christians. And I think you could say sometimes the way I like to think of it is this, that God made us a certain way, and he did not make us to be atheists. And so when a lot of pressure is put against the church, some very interesting things happen. I think of, there was a Marian old bishop in the 1950s who was talking about China, and that was at the time when Chairman Mao was really killing people left and right. And he said, look, Christianity is a kind of dynamite. We tend not to think of it because we live in a largely Christian society, and we kind of think of it as sort of everyday. You know. He says, no, when it goes into a new country, it's a kind of dynamite. And when you throw dynamite into a circumstance like that, you should expect there to be explosions. And that's actually what happened in the ancient world, right? I mean, Islam, we know, was spread by the sword. Christianity was spread by the martyrs and by ordinary people taking care of one another, showing conspicuous charity, willing to die for the faith. That kind of witness is something that is so rare in history that in the ancient world, they believed that only the greatest philosophers, somebody like Socrates, could die peacefully, could face death peacefully. When they saw Christians doing this, I mean, some of them thought that they were fanatics, but others looked at that and said, boy, there must be something in that for people who are willing to you know, get thrown to the lions, you know, to use that term, or to be beheaded, whatever it might be. So the witness of the truth is powerful. Our faith spread because of our founder was willing to die horribly on a cross under the Roman occupation of Palestine. That tells us something about what that seed is. So, I hear from a lot of people that, some particular figure that they've come across, whether it's, a person who's still alive or a relative, but that's how the most important things in our lives really get transmitted. And when we see somebody that we admire so much that they were willing to give their life to something and they encourage us to give our lives to something, that's God's action in the world.
Yeah. And I'll never forget talking to a Nigerian who had come here, and he told me how the nuns loved our daughters and educated them, whether they were animist, a traditional religion, or Catholic, Protestant, or Muslim. They loved them, and they just were great to our daughters. Boko Haram stole our daughters, raped them, and sold them into slavery. Which do you think attracted me? The charity and love, or this? So that's a very important thing. We have another caller, though, online. Sal, you're calling from Boston?
Taking my call.
Hey.
This is kind of like a side issue, but it's just the recent controversy about Christian Zionism and being Catholic, especially Carrie Prejean Bowler, who was part of the Religious Liberty Commission. She was removed from the commission because they equated her stance against Zionism as being anti-Semitic. And now Ted Cruz has come out and said some kind of anti-Catholic remarks. And I was just wondering what you thought of this, because it's kind of leading to something kind of dangerous for Catholics.
Yeah.
I've lived in Washington, D.C. over 30 years, and I like to say I've paid my debt to society. I should be released back into the community. I'm no longer a danger to anybody. And it's when things like this come up that I say to myself, I probably put in enough time in Washington these days. Look, these are complicated things, especially about Christian Zionism. The church does not believe in Zionism. By that, what I mean to say is, it does not believe that God's promise to the Jewish people of the land of Israel is identical with the modern state of Israel. The church still supports a homeland for the Jews, but it doesn't believe that, the biblical promise is coextensive with the current state. And let me tell you, I've been to Israel and given lectures about religion into the future, and you've never lived until you've seen two Israeli Jews arguing with one another about whether it's a state or a religion, or it's even in Israel it's a complicated thing.
Yep.
So I God bless Carrie Prejean Bowler. She's a beauty queen, and when she I guess she was Miss California at one point, and during the Miss USA pageant or something, she stood up and said she didn't believe in gay marriage. And she was disqualified as a result, I think, of that, or she got into a controversy. Whether she's the best spokesperson for this question, I don't know. And Ted Cruz, God bless him, it's like with a lot of politicians, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, they're okay. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, who knows where they are. I'm not gonna comment anymore about that. It's a little off our topic today.
Yeah. Well. Again, I want to encourage people to get a hold of your book, The Martyrs of the New Millennium, The Global Persecution of Christians in the 21st Century. It's written by our guest, Robert Royal. It is item 5045, and it's available at ewtnrc.com, our religious catalog. And I suspect your other book might be there too, so you can find out about martyrdom in the last century as well as the beginning of this one. Thank you for writing all that and doing all this work. I appreciate it very much, and you're coming all the way from Washington, or we gave you a little reprieve, a little furlough.
It's good to be back in America.
Yes. And I want to bless all of you. May Almighty God bless you and keep you and cause His face to shine upon you and lead you in all of your ways by His peace. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. And not only this show, but Raymond Arroyo's show, where you often see Robert, and all the other programs are brought to you on this network by you. You make it possible. So please keep us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and your cable bill. And if you do that, we'll be able to pay all of our bills every month as well. God bless you all, and thank you very much.